about water. Leviticus 23, back in the Old Testament, and beginning in verse 27, says, also the 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. That's today. Today is the 10th day of the 7th month, which is the Jews call Tishri. It shall be a holy convocation for you, and here you are, all of you are in holy convocation. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. And you shall do no work on the same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. For any person who is not afflicted in soul on that day shall be cut off from his people. And all people who does any work on that same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no amount of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all dwelling. Now, some people, when they read this, they sort of ignore verse 31. It says, a statute forever throughout your generations in all dwellings. And, of course, I know there are generations of Israelites all around us. And it shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest. You shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening. From evening to evening you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So, where's the verse that says to fast? I don't think we used the word fast once there, did we? But what we did read that we are to afflict our souls. The word afflict there is the Hebrew word anah, and if you want to look it up, it's Strong's, it's 6031. And what it means is to be afflicted, to be humbled, and such things. And it's a very common Hebrew word, and it's used for lots of different things, and it does not mean specifically to fast. It just doesn't mean that. However, when we look at the usage in the Bible, we'll find that the Jews are correct because they determine that to afflict your souls on atonement means a complete fast. Let's turn to Psalm 35 and read verse 13. This is a psalm of David, and he was speaking about his enemies. And he says, they reward me evil for good to the sorrow of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth, and I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer would return to my own heart. The word humble there is the word anah, which means to humble oneself, to afflict. It could have been rendered, I afflict myself with fasting. It could easily be rendered that way, and it would be correct. Humbled or afflicted, same thing, anah in Hebrew. Now let's turn to Isaiah 58. And again, we'll read how this word is used. And I'm going to read it from the NIV, because it's a little closer to plain English, and you could follow along in the New King James. Isaiah 58, verses 3 through 5. Why have we fasted, they say? This is the people rhetorically speaking. And you have not seen it. Why have we humbled ourselves, and you have not noticed? The word humbled here is the same word, comes from anah. Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? This is God speaking. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for men to humble himself. Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the eternal God? Well, of course, the lesson is obvious. There's more to fasting than just going without food and water. we are to learn the lesson of fasting, and I'll say, have more to say about that later. But again, the word ana is there translated humble or afflicted, and it's related there to fasting. The whole subject matter there is fasting. So it's obvious to afflict one's souls can mean fasting. Now if you'll turn to Ezra, and if you don't know where Ezra is, you find Samuel's King's Chronicles, and then you have Ezra. And it says there in Ezra 8, verse 21, we're just going to read the one verse. And it says here, I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek him, for him the right way for us and our little ones and all our possessions. It's an interesting verse. He said called a fast so he could be humbled. Same Hebrew word, ana. Then he said, we wanted to seek God to get something from him. That's not what it says, does it? It says to seek from him the right way for us and for our little ones and our possessions. That's the correct reason for fasting, is to seek God's will, not our own will. And one last verse in this short lesson here is Esther 4, verse 16. Esther is right after Ezra and Nehemiah. Comes Esther, and I have it in my notes, so I'm going to read it from my notes. It says, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. This is Esther speaking. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. In other words, it's in God's hands. I'm going to fast and to show God that I'm putting it in his hands. So all of those series of verses show us that to humble one's soul means to fast in many cases. And certainly this is the case at atonement, that we should fast. And certainly God tells us to do it, and we want to do what God says. Now, in a technical sense, the word fast, I did some research some time ago on the word fast, and the word fast itself just means to go without food. And I came to the conclusion all three languages, just Greek, Hebrew, and English, the word fast means to not eat food. And normally in all languages, if you want to speak of a complete fast, then there's an adjective or an adverb that goes with it, and like a complete fast, a total fast. In English, if the doctor tells you he wants you to fast, if he wants you to take liquids and fast, he will tell you. But if he wants you to not eat anything, he says a total fast, a complete fast. And so I mention that because, you know, atonement is a complete fast. Even though it isn't specifically called out there, we see that that is what is meant. Another point is that going without food really doesn't afflict your soul. Let's face it, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, you can go easily. You can go 2, 3, even 4 weeks without any food at all if you drink liquids. And it'll actually be beneficial. You might lose some weight. It'd be beneficial for me. But that's the facts anyway. It's interesting, I think, realizing that, you know, researchers have found out that if you cut off all liquid to the human body, after about 3 days, your internal organs are being damaged. After 4 or 5 days, you might be near death. If you have absolutely no water at all, that means no food, because, you know, food contains some water. So you'll be near death after about 4 or 5 days. Now, some people have lived longer, and they have, you know, survived. But in a general sense, that's true. Your internal organs are being damaged after 4 or 5 days. So that's why. And I thought it's interesting, if you look through the Old Testament, when fasts were called by people of the Old Testament, they almost always were for 3 days, not longer. And that doesn't include the special fast that Moses went on, and that was not a called fast by a human. You know, water is an interesting substance. And God created water in a special way. Water is perhaps the most fantastic substance on earth. It's the only substance we have on earth that appears in three forms: solid, liquid, and gas. No other substance at the same time appears on earth in that fashion. As a matter of fact, if tomorrow all the water on earth disappeared, let's put it this way. If the oceans disappeared tomorrow, guess how long it would take all of us to perish? About a day. we would all be dead in a matter of a day or so. God created water in a very special form. As a matter of fact, did you know that scientists, even today, in 2013, cannot explain everything about water? They just can't do it. Water has some fantastic characteristics. 70% of the surface of the earth is water, and that's by design. If it were not that way, the earth would not be really inhabitable. Interestingly enough, that the human body is about 70% water. So if you want to lose some weight, don't drink any water for a while, lose 70% of your weight, and voila. If you weighed 100 pounds, then you weigh 30. You know. Of course, you'd be dead. But anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting that the earth is 70% water, and the human body is about 70%. Some people say 80%, but some other people say 70, so I don't really know. The reason for the oceans is it's the air conditioner for the earth. If you take away the oceans completely, if God did not put the oceans on earth, the earth would be a terrible place to live. First of all, the side facing the sun would be so hot, it would burn you. And the side away from the sun would be so cold, you'd freeze to death. And that's prevented by the ocean. See, God made water with a fantastic ability to absorb heat. And what happens during the day, the oceans absorb heat, and at night it releases and so on. The oceans are the air conditioner of the earth, and God designed it that way. There's another fantastic thing about water, in that it reacts to heat and cold differently than any substance on earth, except maybe a few exotic things that they found. Water, most substances, when you cool them, they contract. Well, water does too, to a certain point. What happens with water is you cool it to a certain point, and at 4 degrees Celsius, it contracts as being cool. At 4 degrees Celsius, it suddenly begins expanding. And from 4 degrees Celsius down to zero, where it freezes Celsius, it expands. And that is a function God built into water. And one of the purposes of that is that the bodies of water on earth, if it was not for that unique quality of water, all the bodies of water on earth would freeze and kill all the fish. It just wouldn't work right. So God designed all of that, and he designed it for us. He designed it for us to live. Tonight, when you take a glass of water, and if you have some ice cubes in it, I'm not trying to make you thirsty. Really, water is just a fascinating thing. If you have some ice cubes in the glass, you notice that the ice cubes come to the top. That's because of that quirk of water, that how it expands when it freezes. And usually when you have a glass of liquid, the heat rises and the cold goes to the bottom. That's the way it works in almost any liquid. But ice cubes float to the top and they cool the top part of the drink that you're drinking. So you're drinking the cool part of the drink. That's all by design. Proverbs 3:19 says, "The Lord by wisdom founded the earth, and by understanding he established the heavens." And he really did. If you look into all of the things that God has created, you'll understand that that is absolutely true. Well, now I'd like to show you four reasons why we fast. The first one is God says so. We've already covered that. You know, if God told us to fast and didn't tell us anything more, we should do it. If he tells us to fast, especially on the Day of Atonement. But the second reason why we fast is to humble ourselves. And you've seen in some of the scriptures we've already read that the word humble is right in there with the word with fasting. And if you look up all the verses with deal with humility, you'll come to the conclusion that God desires humility, and he doesn't like what's the opposite of that, which is my next point. But let's turn to Deuteronomy 8 and read a section there. Deuteronomy 8, and let's just read verses 2 and 3. It says, "You shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." And so God desired a humble people, and so he did. One of the reasons for that 40 years was to humble them, and that should have made them more teachable. Whether it did or not, I'm not sure. But still, God desires a humble person. 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14, I think I'll just read this one to you. It says, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and heal their land." This is a famous verse that many people like to quote, but it's an important one. He says, if they will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven. God certainly does desire humility in human beings. Psalm 25, verse 9 says, The humble he guides in justice, and the humble he teaches his way. So being humble makes one teachable. That's what he says. And the humble he teaches his way. I would like to turn to Zechariah. Zechariah is near the end of the Old Testament. So if you can find Matthew and turn backwards, shouldn't have a problem. Zechariah 9, verse 9. This is a prophecy about Jesus Christ. It says, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, a foal of a donkey. The word lowly there is derived from the word ana, and it means humble. It says lowly, but it could be rendered humble. He is humble and riding on a donkey. And so God set us the example. Jesus Christ set us the example of being humble. So that's one of the great purposes of fasting today, to be humble, to create in us a humble spirit. You know, when you're hungry and thirsty, you're not very feisty. You know that? you don't pick a fight with somebody. You know, you're just very different when you're hungry and thirsty. Well, I have one more scripture I'd like to read here. It's 1 Peter 5. First Peter was here last night. First Peter 5, verse 5. It says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourself to your elders. And the word elders here just means older people, not ordained people. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourself to your elders. Yes, all of you, be submissive one to another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. And that is actually a quote from Proverbs 3:34. But it's an important lesson. God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. The next point I would like to cover is fasting teaches us the folly of pride. It teaches us the folly of pride. Actually, humility is the opposite of pride. And Matthew 7:22 says, pride is an evil that comes from men's heart. And that's something that we have to work on constantly. Let's turn back to Proverbs 16. I'd like to read verse 18. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better is he of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. And so often you have this contrast between humility and pride. And so if we turn over a little farther to Proverbs 29, verse 23, just read the one verse. A man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. There again we have the contrast. Now let's turn to the New Testament, to 1 John. See, we want 1 John, the second chapter. And we want to read verse 16. For all that is in the world, breaking right into the thought here, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. What do you suppose the pride of life is? Well, I don't know that it's specifically designed or defined, but the pride of life is what people in the world who are very successful, they have lots of money, have lots of possessions, have a good job. They're self-sufficient. They don't need God. Why do they need God when they have all of these things and are supposedly so happy? That's the pride of life, I think. And that's the kind of pride that we do not need. We need to learn to be dependent on God. As a matter of fact, that's my next point is we need to learn that we are all dependent on God. And we really are. And fasting does that like no other thing. You know, when you get thirsty, think. You're happy that God made liquid. It made water. And when you're hungry, you're glad that God made food. Because he made it all. Every bit of it he made. And he made it for us. And we need to learn the lesson that we are dependent on him. If it were not from God, if it were not for God, we would simply die. The food that he provides, the water he provides, sustains our life. That's why in Psalm 14:1 it says, only a fool says in his heart, there is no God. And how true that is. Only a fool. Only a fool that could look at all of creation and say, there is no God. Let's turn to Romans, the first chapter. And read a section that I always liked to read. Romans, the first chapter, beginning in verse 20. It says, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. You know, the people of the earth are without excuse, not knowing there's a God. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And certainly, if you listen to some of the pronouncements of the learned people, you can see that their understanding is darkened. Professing to be wise, they become fools. They change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their heart to dishonor their bodies among themselves, which is rampant today, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature, or creation as it could be, rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. Amen. So Paul is writing there to the Romans that people are without excuse. Not knowing that there is a God and that he requires certain things of them. So to conclude, I think you can see that today is a day to fast. It is really the only way you could afflict your soul. If you went with, went without food, that's not really an affliction much at all. As a matter of fact, people go on food fasts all the time, or not taking food and take liquid. It's called a health fast. People do it all the time. So the four reasons we are here today is to obey God because he commands us to fast and be in convocation, to learn humility, to shun human pride, and to realize that we must truly rely on the eternal God.